Well, I spent a little bit of time this week kind of checking in on my whole AV setup. Like a lot of us on this podcast, I've got a couple of extra microphones, so I thought I might like see what was going on with them. So I was testing out, doing something with my Rode video mic NTG. Fine
Whoa.
microphone, works out well, I guess. And I've got like a GoPro camera that I can hook up as a webcam because I upgraded the firmware. Get this. You remember the days when you'd have to take out some, I think they would even call it removable media, like an SD card or something, and you would copy some like 8-character.3-letter extension file to the root directory and then boot it up and it would install some firmware. And Matt Ray's probably like, I remember those days like 3 hours ago.
Hey, that's true.
Well, that's how you have to update the GoPro, which just seems, I mean, that's like a public company, right?
Quick question though. Did you have to get a special cable? Do you have to get the HDMI out, or do you just, is this all done? Is this magic happening via USB? Talk to me.
It was all USB, and
Oh,
on the
really?
GoPro, USB-C all works. I mean, upgrading the firmware, you've got to put the SD card in and out,
Okay. But
which you
once
got
you
to
do
do.
it, if you are successfully done it, all you need is a USB-C
Yeah.
cable.
All you need is to make your GoPro a pretty good webcam. You just need a USB-C cable and to not want to do it two or three or four times. Just the one time it works, and then
Okay.
it never works again. Is
Oh,
how that
okay.
works out. So now you can reboot your computer, try different cords. You might be like, this cord is wrong. Nope, just it's a one use only USB-C webcam for the
It's exactly what everybody wants.
Yeah, well, so that was fun. And then I hooked up one of my old iPhones. This is my kids continually astonish me with their technology choices. My daughter has an old iPhone that's cracked of mine, the phone that I had when I moved here, I think. And I recently got a new phone and I was going to give her this new one, but she decided she wants to keep the old one.
What?
So I don't know.
Is this
Like,
a
so
feature or a bug? Sounds like a feature. A plan to
yeah,
feature, right? A lot less
that's true.
expensive.
Yeah, and so I'm using my old iPhone that I used to use for videos as kind of like a side camera now. So that's my question is if I normally I have a camera for the Zoom meetings, that we spend time in team meetings maybe. I was on Chime the other day. That went fine. I was on a Chime call with someone and one of their concluding
It was
comments
Amazon.
was well, yes, of course. And one of their concluding comments was wow, you didn't complain about this. Just that, everything worked out and I didn't say anything. Just like, sure. And so, normally you're like looking into the camera when you're on a meeting, but I was thinking, what if I have the side angle thing in meetings? Is that going to wig people out if they
Wakes
only
us
see their
up.
profile? Yeah.
It's not good. Sorry. Fix your camera for next show.
Because I feel like what I could do then is I could emphasize a point all of a sudden by sort of like, actually looking towards the camera.
For those not watching, Cote did a nice sudden gesture with his eyes. So, yeah, I would say, Cote, it feels like we're spying on you, and then you suddenly turn your head, and it's almost like you found us. So, I say you need to revert back to the more traditional head-on shot.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It's been fun.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the other secret is my other camera stopped working right as we were recording, so that's why I'm using this secondary camera. But I was thinking one last thing. I feel like maybe I could hook it up in OBS where it just kind of like randomly switches the camera. Like I'm in an interview.
It's a really bad producer. It's like,
Yeah.
oh, shot one, shot two.
Yeah. And then that way, maybe while I'm in calls, it'll be like, it'll be like, hey, this is a three camera show we're doing right now. Right? Like,
Oh, I like it.
you know,
Maybe.
the YouTubers are really good about moving the camera angles. They make different points, like the
I
zoom
bet
in, the
it's.
zoom out, the side shot. Like, I think there's something to that.
I bet it's scriptable. I bet you could get like a just a constant on a cadence, like, one, two, cut, one, two, cut, and then between cuts have it zoom, so like cameras are constantly changing
Oh,
and it's like the
yeah.
Coté experience.
I like it. Well, Cote, you're ready to step up to one of, what is it, the ATEM mini switcher. I've got one of those things. So you can just score cameras and you just sit there and play around with it. You can produce yourself. It'll work out well.
Have like some big soft lozenges I can just hit every now and then.
Yeah, that's what I've got right here. You just like click them around and it all works. So yeah,
I want to, so maybe in the final element of my fantasy here is I want to have like, you know, on the Death Star when they're about to launch the thing, there's this big slider that the helmet guy pulls down and it's like, I need one of those for the camera too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They have, they have something similar, but it's software based. Yeah. You need to get your physical switch of it. That'd be great.
Maybe can you imagine like one of those little twisty knobs for a zoom?
I like that. Like most, you know, that whole like Death Star sequence in Star Wars would have been so boring if there was just like a keyboard or even worse, just a mouse. And it was like, you know, destroy click. The planet. And then they just like kind of move the mouse. Death
Star.exe, double click.
Yes. Well, then a person would have a pop-up would have been like, are you sure? That would have been, that would exactly how it would have gone.
Yeah, and then Darth Vader would have clicked the button with his mind.
Click cancel to destroy planet. It'd be something like that. Oh, messed up again.
Yeah, we had to overuse. Oh, yeah. Oh. Well, you know, speaking clicking cancel to destroy planets. Now, Matt Ray, this is where you're going to have to come you're going to have to come rescue us or I don't know, whatever. Inform me. Like, there's something going on with source code in the open tofu and the terraformu.
Yeah.
Is that closed tofu? I don't really remember. And closed like, tofu. Like, so I couldn't tell. It seemed like I read, you know, from Matt Assay, always a fun column.
Yeah.
And he seemed to have some stuff. But then, like, boy, some people just freaked the fuck out.
Yeah,
and
they did.
So how did it work out? Did we get some sort of, what's that PBS show? Brandon, where they're like
Crossfire,
Frontline,
like some frontline trumpets and like a narration going in and figuring it out. Are we gonna get?
Only hope. I think if anything deserves it, this is the kind of treatment I'd like.
I am kind of tired of the softball documentaries that all these software projects have been putting out. You know, it's like, the history of Node or, you know, what a lovely time in Grafana land. I want the hard hitting. What's going on with the
open? This is a good one. This should be it. This one. And then the recent hack would also be the Thriller. What was it? What's the XC? Compression hat? XC?
Yeah.
That is going to be made into some type of short film for sure.
You know, it has like the freeze frame on the code and it starts to darken and the music gets all ominous and they're like, and that's when the code was introduced. Okay, well, maybe not. So the open tofu kerfuffle with closed tofu or terraform as it's traditionally known. It's kind of interesting. So I wasn't paying that close attention at first when it came out, but Matt Assay posted an article to, I guess it's InfoWorld, and that essentially accused the OpenTofu developers of lifting and pasting the code from a recent Terraform feature. And then, you know, a lot of people jumped in and started, both attacking the body of the article and then maybe some of the motives behind the article. So, you know, the gist of it is there's, you know, this new feature that introduces a new syntax to Terraform. And it was introduced after the fork. So, you know, all clarity, you know, it was definitely introduced after the fork. I tried to dig into the code to see if maybe it was bumping around in like a development branch or something before the license change. You know, so it would ostensibly still be covered by the license. I couldn't find that, but, you know, I only looked for about 10 minutes. but the code, when you look at the code side by side, they're not that similar, but they are. So when I say that, Go is a very pedantic language that has a formatter that makes it so if I tell you to write something and, you know, chances are good you're going to write it fairly similarly and the code is going to get formatted fairly similarly and there's not that many ways you could probably implement it. So the code, like the variable names are different, the methods are different, there are some different uses of how methods are. So on first pass, it really doesn't look like the same thing, but there's a weird header that assigns copyright to HashiCorp for a file that was ostensibly new. or, you know, post fork, which that's why I was wondering if maybe it, if the, the files existed before the fork. But besides that weirdness, like, it's pretty different. But also, wouldn't the developer probably have, I mean, I think what Matt Assay is insinuating, or, you know, saying, he said they copy pasted, clearly not copy and paste. Possibly they read the code. I don't know. You know, obviously, you know, we can't speak to that. But there are a lot of people who are upset about this. The HashiCorp folks have issued a cease and desist. But as another thread pointed out, a cease and desist is like lawyers just throw those around for no good
reason.
It's just
a letter.
It's just a letter. You know, it sounds scary, but
here we should tell the other side, Open Tofu, and I guess kind of, I think through
the Linux Foundation
yeah. lawyer, I mean, someone that obviously we would expect them to not agree, but they don't. So I'll just read a couple things here. Open Tofu vehemently disagrees with any suggestion that it misappropriated, missourced, or otherwise misused HashiCorp's BSL code. And then it goes on to say, indeed, it seems that HashiCorp may be conflating code that it had previously been open sourced under the MPL and more recently developed code in it published under the BSL. And then they go on to say that the maintainers have investigated this and they'll be issuing, you know, a much more detailed explanation, you know, in the coming days. So probably sometime this week. So you got that, and then you've got, you know, I don't know, there were so many tweets about this, but two people I figured I'd kind of like pull out of the ether that I think are well respected. You had Brian Cantrell, you know, formerly of Solaris Sun, and then now of Oxide. You know, he basically, you know, kind of said he did not think it was if you'll copy paste it, and he sort of kind of went on to say, hey, you're just making a huge accusation here without, you know, kind of any, you know, kind of, if you will, evidence, right, beyond just kind of what you see there. And then a friend of the show, and I think we mentioned him like every show for the last 5 months, Adam Jacob, says, quote, incendiary claim with no actual facts backing it up. The code looks completely different. That's Adam Jacob saying that. Now, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think everybody, you know, if you've just got even the most basic coding skills, like I guess all of us can just kind of look at it and you can just kind of decide.
It's very different. Yeah.
I mean, it's not, I don't know. It's not like cut and dry to me, like either way. Right.
Not at all.
And I do think, well, then you get into the other thing I think is interesting. Well, like, you know, even like, I think you can say for sure it's not copy pasted because it's just not identical. So we'll start there. But then you kind of get into the whole, like, well, like, what if they did look at it? Like, then you kind of get into like, is that even illegal? Right. I mean, cause that's the whole thing, you know, goes back to like lots of different, legal cases we've had about copywriting code and things like that. So I'm not even sure if someone looked at it and they implemented something similar, maybe people are irritated, but it doesn't feel like there's anything wrong with that. I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah. I mean, that's where some of the grounds around like patents and stuff would possibly come into play, but you know, this is, I mean, yeah, I don't know the rules for, you know, black box development or what do they call it? Like a Chinese wall, where, you know, you don't know what's in the code and you re-implement it. I don't know how that works with like the BSL and, you know, licenses that, you know, you're free to read it, but you're clearly the code was not copied. Maybe the code was read. Is that legal? I don't know.
Well, it's kind of like inspired by it. It's all back to like plagiarism. Like you can read facts somewhere else and kind of say them again. But if it appears too, you know, the syntax is too similar, or
but also if you just ran their code and saw how it worked, you would probably implement it this way too, right? So, I mean, you can get away with a lot just by, I mean, get away. You can really figure out how something works just by running it. You know, you don't actually have to read the code. This isn't like thousands of lines of code. This is, you know, a few hundred.
And this does seem like a pretty common, like anyone that's like even the simplest learning kind of code, like this is kind of how you do it. Like you look at examples.
Yeah.
You kind of understand things. You implement them a slightly different way. You do your own thing. So I don't know. It doesn't feel like this is not like, I don't know. It doesn't feel like this is like the super secret, like no one could have come up with this, right?
It's, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Another one. But I did, Cote, I wanted your take on this. I thought it was interesting on the writing side, I guess it's published through InfoWorld. And you tell me what you think. I kind of think of Matt Essay in this case as sort of an op-ed writer is kind of what he's writing, right? Versus like a journalist, right?
Sure.
And I just think I just thought it was interesting in this case, like reading his article, it's, I don't know. I kind of felt like, hey, this kind of called for more journalism than it called for like an op-ed. It sort of like feels like if you're going to make this accusation, like you probably need to call like Open Tofu first, right? Like if this was like a, I don't know, maybe the New York Times is, that's a stretch to say that, but like maybe like, I don't know, maybe even the Register, like you would like call someone and like ask for comment, right? Like, hey, we see that you've done this. And we're alleging this, like, do you have a response? And I just think, I don't know, maybe it's a subtle difference there. And I know you've, had some, written op-eds a lot and you've had some experience with editors. Like, what do you think happened behind the scenes here? Or am I wrong? Is my idea here that this should be more journalistic is wrong?
Yeah, I think your framing is, what I would think is, well, I can tell you what I think about when I go through these things is I either want to make sure that something is true. True is an overloaded word here. I want to make sure that they're, well, let me be outcome based. I want to make sure I don't get in trouble. I mean, in every part of my life, that's all I want to know. Am I going to get in trouble? Okay, then we can keep talking. Yeah, like when it comes to like reporting on primary stuff, like I try to avoid that because like, yeah, you want to like, I don't even know what, I wasn't trained as a journalist, but you probably want to get like two sources and like call people ahead of time and ask them if it's like some accusation thing or whatever.
I haven't seen anyone who has like a background in Go or, Terraform who said, oh yeah, they totally copied this. Everyone is defending the Open Tofu developers.
Sure.
Right. So if you were a reporter, ostensibly you could find some sort of, expert in the field to like back up your claim. There's no way they wrote that, but
yeah. And so going back to like what I did, and not in this instance, but in general, like would do is, I think if you have like an op-ed commentary thing, then you're kind of commenting on other news or ideas, mm-hmm. right? Like things that are out there or your own firsthand observations. Now, that's not always the case, but that's kind of a thing in my mind. Now another thing is, things get squiggly in the tech news world, right? Yeah, like. You've got kind of like the tech target world out there, and right. Then you've got like computer world, and then you've got info world. I don't think the old ZDNet stuff really exists that much anymore. And then you've got like the Register, which like seems like the most journalisty of tech news sites out there now. Like there used to be many other ones, but I think the Register is still sort of like, quote unquote, is just like kind of regular old school journalism, like yeah. that you would expect. And then of course you've got the News Stack, and then you've got the Stack, which is always hilarious, and various other like weird little sites out there that have news, right? And a lot of the sites, you just sort of like send them articles. Or you can write articles for them, and it's not like they're thoroughly done. Now, I think, in this instance, I should have looked at the code. I don't even know, right? Like, it sounds like from what you were saying, Matt Ray, that it's some sort of like, is it a parser sort of thing for a new format that you would be consuming and outputting?
Yeah.
And so, like, in that instance, like, I mean, I'm no whatever. But like in my mind, as like what's little left is in my mind of a programmer, it's like if I'm writing basically like a parser for a known format, there probably is like an optimal way of doing it. And
there's
so like,
probably already patterns in the code of how it's been done before.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I just when I read through the code, I was like, well, if you told me how to do, told me what the output was, I'd probably end up with something similar. That to me, that's like,
yeah.
And the code, the variable names are different. Some of them have slightly different arguments. I mean, it's
it also makes me wonder. Like, I forget what these things are even called, but you know, you can you write a. There's some old, I don't know what it is now, but back when we were doing, when I was doing this, it was a library that everyone used to use some schema that would auto-generate a parser for you, which makes me wonder, like, then do you have the copyright for that auto-generated parser code? And then if someone else did that and they generated the same code, because it's probably deterministic. Like if you give it, if any one person in any country in any point in time gives this parser generator the same schema, it probably will generate the exact same code.
Right.
So then you're kind of fucked if you don't have like kind of a legal framework that's like, we all got the same shit in here. But like, I don't know. I mean, it is, I don't think there's been any like follow-up investigation or anything, right?
Well,
like,
both sides have said more is coming. Right.
Yeah.
And so,
and I do think Matt Asi did issue a follow-up tweet, and he said that something to the effect that his, he had done deeper analysis, right? That was not shown. Yeah. So of course, but of course that then opens him up immediately. He said, here's what he said, quote, on his tweet was a quote, otherwise stated, this is complicated. And a few minutes of eyeballing code and saying, quote, this looks fine to me is an analysis. Even deeper analysis like this. And I'll link to the thing he says. And he says, there's a lot more going on here. My OG post was based on deeper review. I can only hint at. So then people just said, okay, like, you know, where is that? So he has yet to show that. So, and he also kind of went on to say, I guess he also said in another tweet, he said, I regret how strongly I express myself, force of habit, but grateful for those who express support against mob dogpiling. To our execs, my post put under fire. They didn't agree with my conclusions, but responded with kindness. They're the kind of OSS community I want to join. So I don't know that. This old tweet, I was like, I don't know, man. You throw a haymaker, or you know, you throw a big stink bomb out there, and like that, that people like are complaining, and sort of like this, that didn't, that kind of fell on, I don't know, I'm gonna say deaf ears, but sort of didn't like sit right with me. I was like, well, you know, you kind of made a pretty big accusation, and I think we should also just say, you know, just to kind of give, you know, kind of to your point earlier, Cote, it's like, you know, tech news is always a little bit awkward in the sense of like, you know, lots of people are involved. So Matt is, as it says here, he runs developer relations at MongoDB. And those for playing along at home, like, remember, MongoDB is using the, what is it, SSPL license as well. Right. So that's the same thing adopted by HashiCorp. So clearly, you know, I think it's fair to say he's got some type of agenda that, hey, this, you know, people aren't, you know, following these licenses or and things like that. And if you read, you know, just the tone of the rest of the article here, it's like, you know, a few phrases that jump out, like, quote, the hubris of youth. And then, you know, he goes on to says like, maybe HashiCorp wasn't that dumb after all. So he, you know, I don't know. He sort of has like a disdain for open tofu. Like, I think anyone, you can just read that for yourself. It kind of comes through. And so clearly, you know, he's got an agenda of some kind as well. So that's why the whole thing was just like, I don't know. Feels like you're pushing an agenda here. Feels like, you know, you're definitely calling out code that is, many people are debating whether it is. I'm not even sure if it's quote unquote illegal.
I don't see that much debate though. I mean, people are just like, you know, I haven't seen any real strong defenses of HashiCorp's position. And maybe it's just, you know, that's the echo chamber I live in.
To be fair though, it was really, I mean, Matt wasn't really, doesn't work for HashiCorp. So I guess they've come out and did the cease and desist, but there's not much to it. So I guess really what comes out of here is HashiCorp takes some legal action against, you know, OpenTofu. That'd be question one. And it does seem like OpenTofu, they seem ready to go. They seem, their tweets are very confident that they will prove what, you know, that they did not do what's alleged here. So maybe they're just speaking confidently, but it definitely gives off the vibe like we have the receipts and we're prepared to show you like how we got to this conclusion, which would be interesting.
Well, I mean, first of all, two things. We'll see if I get to both of them. First of all, like, I don't know. I feel like if you're if one is in a situation like this, you don't spin up your lawyers because someone kicks some sand in your face. Like whatever the case may be, that's just a bad look. You should just be like, hey, our shit's still cool. Want to buy some? Right? Like you got to just kind of keep moving on. But whatever, people do whatever they like. And two, like, yeah, I mean, it's also like, you know, Matt Essay has been, I don't know, he's been like a commentator for a long time. I don't remember all the articles he's written, but like, I mean, especially compared to like Brian Cantrell and Adam Jacob, I'm not really sure. I mean, that he's being out of the ordinary. Like he's got it, like compared to other people, he's pretty fucking grandpa calmed down on things. Right. So like, I think he, and he's got a pretty, his column is good. There's not that many long lived columns that actually like are, good out there. and so I think, it's fine, whatever the case may be. Right. Yeah. Like, and like, we are like whether correct or not, like no one really fucking cares. Like it'll blow over. Like all the, you know, I need to finally write down a list, but I keep trying to think of like all the stuff. This is almost going to sound like I'm dismissing the interestingness of what we do here, but all the scandals and things that we've gone over in the past couple of years, and like I don't think anyone cares. Like it's just like a big brouhaha, even in this like post Twitter sort of world. So like, whatever, it'll be fine.
I don't know. This one, though, I think I'd maybe go the other way. It's like, I don't know, if someone comes out and accuses you of stealing something, like point blank, in a pretty big written format, that certainly amongst the technical community and the people that follow this, I think that's a bit, that's different. That's a little different than just like, oh, I have a strong opinion, you know. So
well, that's why we're talking about it, right?
Well, I guess. What else can open? I mean, it's not like Open Tofu and that the Linux community. Like, it's not like they want this to happen, right? They weren't like, I'm looking forward to this, but they're kind of forced into responding, right? I mean, it's like, well, it makes acquisition. I can't speak today, and I've got to do something, right? So I think. It kind of comes back to this. It's like, well, I don't know. I mean, and I think it's worth like questioning Matt's motivations here, right? Like, hey, I mean, this is like, you have to write a column, but this seems to really kind of like, you know, you seem to have very obvious motivations writing this.
Oh yeah.
Or not.
It is like a pile of stuff you want to avoid being around and stepping in. And is it equivalency? Like, I mean, other people say a lot of kind of jerky, weird things as well. That's my only point. But it is an unfortunate like thing to get wrapped up in. Hopefully, it'll get resolved. Now, of course, maybe both sides are kind of gunning for like, well, maybe something else will happen that people care about a lot more in this wacky world of open source. Some other project. Maybe there's some subterfuge forces who are like, oh, here's another community fork.
But I think the meta thing, I guess the real meta point I like to make on all these kinds of things is like, to me, this is just like another way HashiCorp is losing. It's like, fine. You know, you wanted to make this license change because you thought you're going to make more money. It's like, I don't really think that's happening. Now you've spawned another competitor. What did you think was going to happen? Did you think everyone was going to be like, oh, great, we won't do it? Like they've kind of forced people to fork it. Now people are forking it. So they got a whole nother like competitor out there they have to deal with. Now other people, not even at your company, are writing about you and what your potential license, that's sort of just, if you will, to a very small effect, you know, the little Streisand effect here, calling attention to this like other thing. And now your lawyers have to talk about it and you have to sue. But none of this is making HashiCorp more money, right? Product is better. Nothing is actually being solved. And it's sort of just like, you know, it's kind of back to this whole, I think, this whole mess. Like I kind of just put it back and be like, hey, you're getting what you deserve here. This is how it goes. And you know what? And I said it last week. I'll say it again. It's like, you're just on the glide path to private equity. When the release comes out and, you know, you've been bought up by Progress or something, we'll just be like, well done, guys. Good job. Good luck.
Yeah. I mean, cause clearly like Matt Essay's not on like the GitHub beat where he's, you know, reading through commits and, you know, comparing code. Someone fed him this article.
Absolutely.
Which means somebody at Hashi is probably, they're mad about Open Tofu. You know, clearly they're not the only ones. You know, there are other organizations that are mad that the CNCF like quickly moved to, you know, give this project a home. And, you know, and then a few months later, boom, you know, we've got the Valky, you know, for the Redis. And so like, you know, hey, we, you know, maybe this thing deserves a little more attention. So somebody at Hashi, you know, is paying a close attention. They're like, hey, we have this new feature. Why did they do this?
Yeah.
You know, oh, this looks, you know, this doesn't look right. You know, call up our favorite reporter and, you know, get them to post something. And yeah, it just kind of, it's not a good look, but they're somebody at Hashi is probably very aggrieved about this and is going to continue to like grind this axe.
I like the idea that there's the GitHub source code beat. There's just, you know, well, sitting at their desk with they got that like white short sleeve button up shirt and maybe their hat back, and they got their feet up on the desk and they're just
inside of that is probably an op-ed that is worth writing, and I think we get people's attention would be like, hey, should the Linux Foundation quickly react to, like, you know, essentially build new projects that are, you know, through forking, right? Like, I think that would be so if you wanted to take a stance there, probably lots of opinions and I know it's been written a little bit, but like, I think, you know, Matt, you could write that. You could say, hey, you know, this is we think the Linux Foundation is taking on a bad role here or doing something. Yeah. Like, okay, you could write that. That's a nice opinion piece. You could have some good discussion here, but to do it this way, this is a very backhanded way to bring it up. If your issue is like, I don't like the fact how quickly people spun this up, and I think you're stepping outside your lane. Sure. Very debatable topic. I'm sure many people would like to debate that. This does not seem like a good way to talk about that.
I think the Linux Foundation's only response at this point is to host a fork of Mongo.
Yeah, I mean that would be a good article, Brandon, which is like, because you know a foundation, they have other than just like chilling out and having a good time for the people who work there, they have like the motivation of like, one, you want to genuinely help the community and the mission and all that, which is fantastic. But then two, like you're helping your member organizations, which is to say the people who pay you. And at some point, you know, in this whole open source forking thing, you don't want your only three member organizations to be Google, Microsoft, and Amazon.
Right.
And so like, you've got to figure out what this line is where you're just like, okay, if we take all the open source, the beloved open source infrastructure projects, and we allow them to fork and we host the forking, then no open source based infrastructure startup is going to be friends with us.
Yeah.
Because they know that we're just sitting there waiting to fork them. Right. So like,
look for the rug pull. Yeah.
I mean, I don't like, I can't even think off the top of my head what an open source thing is like, who's next, but like, you have to imagine if you're like, whoever, whatever company you may be, if your stuff is based on open source as a startup, and then you get, you know, you're sort of getting calls about, you know, little foundation projects here and there, you're like, is this like, what's going on here? So at some point, as a foundation, you've got to kind of like stop accepting forks of projects, because like, I bet there's a threshold when you hit like 15 to 20%, the politics are not cool of like, your projects are all forked from commercial ones. Like, it seems like that would be,
and I think,
is the right word business? Bad for community.
Yeah, I do think you can also just talk about, like, you know, I think the fork often is portrayed as like, you know, it's like the rebels, like, okay, hey, we're forking this, and, you know, it's like, we're going to build it together. But like last week, I think Valky's is probably a better example. It's like, well, wait a minute, these aren't the rebels. These are like, you know, all the biggest companies in the world coming together to like write it. And it's like, so, I mean, I think fair question, right? Like, how easy, like, how much does a foundation want to condone that versus like, okay, just stay out of it. The foundation can stay out of it and be like, hey, let this thing go spin up on its own, and then you kind of decide, because there is like some favoritism, or it helps. I don't want to say favoritism, but like, if it's going to help the largest vendors in the world, like, okay, you need to think about that. Even if you think you're quote unquote doing the right thing. So I think, you know, that kind of stuff worthy to debate. This kind of stuff, like cherry picking something, and then, you know, I think kind of disingenuous.
Yeah. Really, well, we've been saying, in this case, you just got to go like, I don't know, get the two files and look at them or whatever. Right. And like, and in theory, like, you know, you've got I hope version control systems do this, but you can ask when this was checked in and who.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I tried to look, but you know, it was new to the OpenTofu branch, and I didn't go spelunking in pre-license fork versions of Terraform. So I think that's probably the case. It's like it probably existed in a branch and they grabbed it out of the branch, and you know, it's probably fine. And that's, you know, if that just makes it open and closed. It's like, not only did, you know, was the code, you know, not only is this a new implementation, the code that we, you know, potentially infringed on existed before, and that just makes Hashi look dumb. But
yeah, I don't know.
We're going to have a follow up to see if that.
Well, I do think if I was betting just from the tone, it feels like OpenTofu has the receipts. I feel like
they're going
to produce something where it's like, oh, didn't realize, and it's going to be like, oh, didn't realize that. I guess you could do that. But yeah, for sure, we'll have a follow up. I'm sure a long post is coming soon enough on it.
And to maybe to cap it off, to get to your question, Brandon, about like, you know, being an op ed author writer, like, you know, when things like this come up, if you have made a mistake, you have 3 glasses of bourbon that night instead of just your regular one or two, and then you're like, you wake up the next morning, you're like, holy fuck, I know what I'm going to write next now. I don't have to come up with a topic. And so really, it's a blessing.
Yeah, I got it wrong. You know, a new facts have emerged. I mean,
even better.
Like the register even, works that way. They're even like, better. Let's stir the pot. Oh, look what we stirred up. Yeah.
And even better. So that sort of like intermediate understanding, expert level is like, whether you're right or wrong, you've got another column.
Yeah.
Right. You can just kind of keep coasting on that until
absolutely
no one cares anymore. Like, remember when Red Hat changed their licensing all around? That was like 2 weeks of news content that people had to write about. It was amazing. And then you had to move on to something else.
Well, this needs new material for more columns.
Well, speaking of moving on to something else, what we have next here. Now, I haven't watched the Google Cloud Next keynotes as much as I know Brandon has, but what's going on over there, Brandon? All I know is that my friend Josh Long presented there, and that our Richard Schroeder had lots of pictures of people in Twitter. That's all I've kept up with. So, but I knew that you, Brandon, could give us the rundown on what's been going on.
I did watch it. There was the quote unquote main keynote that was I saw, and then yes, we did see in the developer keynote. In fact, Cote, I thought it was a little. You really should have watched, or maybe you should watch it because. Your current colleague, Josh, was up there with, I believe, your old boss, Richard Schroeder, who was the MC for the developer keynote. So I was like, they're just missing Cote. Cote, you should have been up there.
Oh, that would have been sweet.
So it's good. So the main gist of it, though, my main takeaway was the message was, quote unquote, the new way to cloud. That was sort of their overall theme for it. And I would say, you know, they had the typical, like, you know, things we've come to kind of know and maybe love. It's sort of like, you know, hey, we built out a lot of new infrastructure. Our cloud is huge. So like, we all get that. They, of course, announced their own ARM-based chip called Axion. So that means, so I think Graviton is in its second or third version, right? That's the AWS chip. Microsoft announced they will have an ARM chip. And then they showed, I think it's Thomas Kurian came out with the actual chip or something that looked like the chip. So everyone has an ARM chip. So we got that. Then they talked a little bit about, you know, that they had all the other stuff like, you know, Intel Xeons and things like that. Also, just a quick side note, it's like any company just so quietly faded away. Like you used to always hear about having all the new Intel stuff. And now it's just barely a line item, which I thought was just kind of interesting. It's just like, they just move on. But they also talked a lot about the TPU chip, which is their kind of version of like, if you will, the AI kind of chip, you know, sort of a competitor to NVIDIA. Now, there was no Jensen Huang. Okay. That was shocking to me. I was like, oh my gosh, he's not there. I can't believe it. But they announced all of that. So
the run is over.
Yeah. The run is over. That's it. You know,
the streak has ended.
It is over.
Maybe like dog ate his jacket and he's like, can't go up. Sorry.
No. Well, I thought maybe because of like the TPU thing, cause that's like a sort of a, So it's like, of course, though, they announced they're going to have, you know, whatever the latest NVIDIA stuff was. So all that is kind of like the normal keynote stuff. Now, the rest of the keynote I thought was kind of interesting in the sense of like, they are definitely pushing. And I guess maybe just the broader community is pushing. It's like the world is going to go to these AI agents. And so they showed a bunch of different agents. So if you will, so you kind of think of the infrastructure is like they have all the hardware. Then, of course, they have all the models. They announced like a new Gemini. They announced that they support all the new models. But then they announced their management layer, Vertex. And so the kind of the pitch is like, well, with Vertex, you would basically build AI agents that would do specific things. And they had a bunch of different examples. They had a shopping agent, which was sort of like a website that would, if you will, find like a sweater you saw at a concert. They would basically find it for you, order it for you, hook you up with the specific vendor. They had, you know, obviously things around like building a tent. So like, you know, you could do this thing, building a campaign rather for a tent. So if you're a marketing professional, so you would, again, use an AI agent and they would help you kind of work through all of these specific tasks. And then they had data agents, which is sort of like you have a whole bunch of enterprise data. You want to see a bunch of reports. You'd have an AI agent for that. And then they kind of finished off with code agents, which they call Gemini Code Assist, which is, again, help me build a website. Or in this case, it was help me update the website so that we had some like new landing pages and stuff like that. So interesting in the sense of like, I thought the narrative was pretty interesting and that it was easy to comprehend, right? It was like, use Vertex, and it was sort of, and they kept using this word grounded instead of kind of a RAG, right? The idea was like, we'll ground the results of your, if you will, machine learning model that you build in using the data and information you have. And I actually like that metaphor. I like that better than like RAG, because I have a hard time like remembering what it was. So it's kind of like the vision of the internet they're kind of creating is like, you know, every SaaS service or a website you're going to go to at the top is going to be like a little chat bot. And that's like your agent for like doing things on that website. And I don't know. So part of me is like interesting, but another part of me is like, I don't know if I want like lots of more agents. Like it just feels like there's going to be like, everyone's going to have an AI agent. And I was sort of like, I don't want to have to do any of this. Like I kind of always come back to this idea is like, why do I have to go talk to all of these different agents? Why can't I just be like, I mean, you know, get me the sweater and I just go to like one thing, right? Like the Gemini thing for them. But it's clearly like, I don't know. I guess I just kind of put it in like, as we work through what is the potential UI and how all of this technology be deployed, I guess right now, I think we are sort of just applying what we know before to the new thing. It's like, oh, you have a website, Matt? You should build an agent on your site and this like use your data. And then Cote, you have a website, but I always think of like the human centric view. And it, for example, the one they showed was like registering for, you know, your health benefits. It's like, I don't want to go to all these sites. I just want to be like, you know, just like, you know, update my health insurance for next year, get it done. Or you can imagine something like this is like, I change my address for all the sites that need it. Like, I don't want to have to go to each one. Right. So I don't know. Maybe I'll start with you, Cote. I don't know. Do you buy off on like the agent AI view of the world? Is that like, is that what people should be doing, or, you know, should, or are we thinking too small in the way that it's being applied?
I guess the thought leader in going on here, is that, you know, AI is, we know it nowadays, whatever you want to call it, is AI is just like, not just, but is a feature of other things. It's not like its own sort of product. Right. So like, the way we experience AI now is it is its own product. You go and you go specifically somewhere and you chat with it, which has severe limitations because it really doesn't integrate well with the rest of the world. Even in Gemini's own one, it doesn't seem to integrate well with itself. Like, you know, I complain about this all the time. I load up my D&D files into Google Drive and I'm like, here is the directory structure to get to the file I uploaded. And Gemini's like, I don't know what you mean by the word file.
How do you get it?
No, I'm out.
File.
Right? Nope. Yeah. And so like that method is kind of annoying. And then of course, probably because of like, you know, scandal is the wrong word, but people like losing their shit over web scraping and stuff. It also can't just retrieve shit off the internet. And you're like, you're Google. Don't give me this shit.
Right.
Like, well, whatever. But I think, you know, as you're going over it, it was reminding me of back in like, I don't know, let's say 2002, when people were talking about like, you know what we should do? We should add search into our product.
Yep. Exactly.
And so like similarly, like nowadays you wouldn't, well, maybe Matt Ray would, maybe me in a few instances, but like, I wouldn't think of like the search bar as my primary interface to the rest of my computing world, right? Like I would go to the application to do the thing I was doing, but I would expect there to be good search within that application, right? And like, I think similarly, like, I don't think it's, I mean, who knows what things will end up being, but like, it's not unreasonable to think that like, oh, all you're going to do, an agent is a weird word, but like, all you're going to do is add in the AI feature to all of this stuff. So like if you have whatever you're using for your to-do list manager or your we'll use a calendar. You have a calendar and you like add AI to your calendar, then when you want to schedule a meeting, you would go to your calendar and you would be like, I got to schedule with three people. You go figure it out, right? Like, you know, now is that AI? I mean, it could be. It might be that that's like a better application of it than doing other things, but I don't know. I think adding it as a feature would be fine and probably it would work out well. Like all those demos as people make fun of, like all those demos that are just like, go book me a trip or go buy me a sweater. I would just be like, no. I want you to show me options of what to do.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, to cap it off, I think as I, you know, it's been probably a year or so now, but like, I think a lot of the benefits that I get from these chat interfaces is just like, it removes all the shit of the internet when I want to find something. Like I was having an explain.
Which is there because of Google.
Right. Because this morning I was having it explain like what a, what do you call it? Like what the discount rate is like for money in the future versus, and not versus, but like with net present value. And like, man, if I had to look that up on the internet, that would have been fucking terrible. But it was actually really great.
Just to summarize it for you. Yeah. Yeah, I think this is just the future implementation we're not going to notice. Like, this is Google saying, well, right now you've got a series of agents that talk to each other to build up, you know, what you want. And meanwhile, the UX for that is like, we don't care. You know, do what I say and come back to me with an answer. That's all that's the UX.
Yeah, and then the other thing that I think is product strategy wise that's going on here that I think, well, I assume this is what's going on, but what it makes me think is like, this is a good example of if you are a tools vendor to people building things, of course you would want this embedded AI model, because that means the maximum amount of people to sell your tool to, right? Like you've got all the different apps out there that are going to be embedding your AI stuff and driving usage of it rather than consolidating down to just fewer of them. And then instead of just talking about how we have this great AI, these AI services that you can embed in your project, look how cool they are. It's really like this, it's rare. Is it rare? It's difficult to pull off. And here's an inspiring set of functionality to make you think about using it, right? So you go through all these agents and what they're doing, and what you're doing is you're, instead of just talking about a bunch of tools you could assemble into something, you're actually showing what you could be doing. You're which is nice. Like you know, the opposite of that is like a lot of infrastructure software out there for programmers. It looks really cool, and you're like, and it's just to like buy a product. Like what am I going to do with this? Like, what is an interesting application of it? Especially,
right, I think that's where it kind of, like, I would say this whole keynote kind of landed was like, okay, like it's very incremental. It's like, okay, the search bars are all going to be replaced with like these AI chat bars, and it's like, but it feels like if that's all we get out of this, like it's not going to be that good, you know. So it's like it kind of left me thinking like, oh, like we're probably just missing it. People haven't thought about it. It's either something completely new about how we're going to do it, or there's going to be a whole different UI. But given like, listen, when I say that sort of as industry-wide, it's like no one's figured it out, right? So given like all you can do is work with the ideas you have, not like, you know.
Well, they have figured it out so far. It's chat, right? I mean, just this give and take interface. That's
right. But I guess that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's where we are, but it just feels like this isn't the final state. Like, no. It feels like we're missing it. Like, we're missing something else.
If their announcement was like, with Gemini, we can finally read files off of your Google Drive, and we can read any web page on the internet because we already have read it and summarize it for you, then that they could have been like, all right, we're going to give you an hour and 50 minutes back. Enjoy.
That would have been good.
It would have been amazing. Well, speaking of things that are amazing, do we have any bureaucracy this episode, Brandon?
I did. I sent some stickers to Robert in the UK. He's the second or third time I sent him new laptop stickers. I always enjoy that. So if you would like to get a sticker, just send your postal address to stickers@softwaredefinedtalk.com. Happy to send you a sticker anywhere in the world. Also, first time ever, we're getting into the free coffee game. So friend of the show, Andy, has started a little coffee thing. So he is going to give the first person in the United States, key thing, have to be in the United States, to send him his post, your postal address to sdt@newinstancecoffee.com. They will receive a free bag of Dawn Python coffee beans. So you can check that out. So all of that is in the show notes. So you should do it. Now, I don't drink coffee because he offered to send me some, but I was like, I just don't drink any of that. Unfortunately, Matt Cote couldn't get you any coffee because you don't live Australia. In the U.S.
But
like, he says he'll find you. He'll give it to you next time you're in the U.S. So I'm looking forward from someone from the community getting this coffee, and then please write in and tell us if it was good or bad. And then finally, last week we talked a lot about, I now know, it's read us, not read us. Many people wrote in to tell us that we pronounced that wrong. And all of you are correct. There's actually a whole website. And we even kind of talked about it before the show, I think, about how to pronounce it correctly, and we did it wrong. So my apologies to all the read us. I hope I'm saying it right
read
now.
Us. The color.
My apologies to everyone. So hopefully last week's episode, you'll forgive us, and hopefully it was useful. So that's it, Cote. Back to you.
Well, there's a lot of fun conferences. If you go to softwaredefinedtalk.com/462, you can check them out. But what you really need to do is go to cote.io/tanzu and watch the online conference that I hosted all about Tanzu and what we do. It's fantastic. The critics agree. There's no critics, but the ones in my mind agree. But with that, Matt Ray, what do you have to recommend this episode?
Well, next week I will be at the Open Source Summit in Seattle. So please come and check out the talk I'm giving. And, if you're there, let me know, and we can hang out. But my recommendation is last trip I took from the KubeCon EU. On the return flight, I had a stop in Qatar, and the airline actually has a tour that you could take if you have a long layover. So I highly recommend it. They're not the only one. Emirates has that too. So if you're in Abu Dhabi, similarly, you can get just like a really cheap tour of the city, which was actually pretty cool, and better than hanging out at the lounge for 4 or 5 hours. So that's my recommendation. Yeah, do it.
Yeah, I mean, the only tours I tend to take on long layovers is like, is there a better restaurant than cheese cubes? I try to go find the fun shopping. Well, how about yourself, Brandon? What do you have to recommend?
Well, Matt, I mentioned them earlier in not so great way, but I still watched. I watched two documentaries this week. I watched the Node.js documentary, and then I watched the React.js documentary. I don't know. For my entire life, I've just sort of don't know what's going on in the front end. So I was like, what's the story with all these things? So I enjoyed both documentaries, told in the hero's journey. It's like basically each project sort of started off by a random person that was had a good idea. And that seems to be the key. It's like you just have to have a good idea. And are you willing to work on it long enough that people actually pay attention? So I didn't really know much about React at all. So that was a whole thing about Facebook and things like that. So it was fun. It was good. So these are definitely kind of like, you know, you need to be interested in they're pretty dense. So you would not want to watch this with like your loved one that doesn't like tech. This is not the kind of this is not the time to break it out. Right. This is pretty dense. But I learned a lot about like JavaScript and all this history of it. So check it out. But again, probably only need to watch it with people who are really into tech. And even then, you need to watch it with people that are really interested in learning something about it. You know, so that's a very small audience. So probably have to watch it by yourself.
What is maybe some listeners can write in or whatever, maybe even send some voicemail that they've generated themselves about this experience. But like, what would a relationship be like if your loved one was someone who would sit down and watch the React documentary? like ongoing. I mean, you know, sure, that one moment in time like would be
but you
fun,
just but have like, to be like you just have to like have a partner that's like it's developer, like an end of tech, right? I mean, that's the whole thing.
Well,
otherwise
sure.
It's yeah. Like even I mean I was actually my son sort of watched it a little bit because he was on his phone mostly, but it's good though. But they do a good job. Like I think I think they're all done by Honeypot. They do a pretty good job of like creating the hero's journey. And I will say this though, like you can tell they struggle because it's honestly, it's like 90% men talking, right? Unfortunately, but it's just how it comes out. But you can tell someone's like, well, like what else could we have in the background? And so because there's always like a dog. There's like a dog sitting down in front of someone and around. So like, they're clearly to me, like there's somebody who's like setting up the scene. He's like, do you have anything else here? Like, is there like a loved one that could walk by? Like maybe we could just get a dog. Cause there's like the B roll is always like they're walking dogs or their dogs are sitting quietly by them while they're doing the interview, which I think is
right.
Get it. Listen, I'm sure they're just like, I'm sure the people making this, because they're always well produced. So I'm sure they're like coming off of like doing some type of like, you know, safari documentary. And then they're sitting in a room and there's like, we need more than you. We need you to, and could you also go put on a clean t-shirt? Right. So, and I say this as someone, I like everyone that was in it did a great job. Right. And I think they do a really good job explaining the story, but I do think it's funny that they always have their dogs sitting next to them as they're recounting the story of like, no one believed in us. You know, I was the only one that believed in React, or like I thought it was a stupid idea. And then they kind of like B-rolled with the dog sitting there quietly looking up. That's good.
Yeah. You know, the thing I was mentioning, if you go to kote.io/Tanzu, we had a professional crew doing it. You can tell that I'm sure this didn't happen there, but I'm sure there's lots of instances where you have the professional crew. They're very professional. It was fun. Where they're just like, okay, I like your idea of you writing on a whiteboard. It's cool that we filmed that, but now maybe like, could you like feed some carrots to your kid, and maybe we'll film that instead, and use that instead of the you know, panning as you're at a whiteboard looking up at it explaining something. But back to my query, like documentary aside. Like, you know, if you had two programmers or two operations people or even an operations person and a programmer, like, would you ever talk about anything except computers? Like, would you be in that silo of just talking about tech stuff?
Well,
is that better or worse? Like, what is that like?
I think it's very specific. I think age and experience. Like, I think we all have, we know people that work a lot in tech, but shall we say, do not want to discuss or even think about it the moment they're not doing it. Like, so like there's like a period of like, people would be like, no, like when you've reached that cliff, like that's my job. When I leave, I do not want to talk about it at all. So, but you're right. There's going to be this window, especially early in your career when you're learning a lot and like you're doing stuff, or you're on a very passionate project that, you know, that you really believe in, as like, certainly like both these stories are, right? I mean, Node and React kind of come from like, you know, people that have this heavy frustration, almost like a problem they had to solve. Like there probably would be a lot of talking about that. Like, is there a lot of people talking about SNMP MIBs? Probably not. Probably it's like that ship is
sailed. That's a short documentary.
No one's having any dinner conversation about that. It's like, no, we did that. We worked it out. XML, probably not many people talking about XML anymore as well.
And then you know, normally in a loved one relationship, it is encouraged that when a problem is brought up by one of the nodes in that situation, you're not supposed to try to problem solve. But I feel like maybe if you were like a programmer, that's like your thing. And so like, maybe you've got to program yourself, be like, oh, at work today, I don't know, we had a problem with the back pressure val, and I couldn't debug it down into the YAML whizzle-doodle. And like, maybe if you're in that loved one situation in your head, you're just like, I don't know, did you try this? Did you look over there? And you've just got to be like, oh, man, that sounds tough. I really, I feel for you. That was difficult. Or if you do that, is your loved one like, what the fuck? Help me debug this. how do you, you know, because like you're both mutually experts on each other's stuff. So at some point, like, is there some expectation change that you're actually supposed to solve the problem instead of just be like, oof. Rough one, eh?
Yeah, that's the happiest of pair programming. It's like, oh, that was good.
Right. Now let's go
to bed.
At some point, you're gonna reach a level of like the potential of mutual mansplaining, where it's just like you're actually like both experts who are really into like debugging a problem, and so it's sort of just like what you do. Whereas, like, you know, you don't have where you're trying to help someone solve a problem you don't really know anything about and they're the expert in it. And so this just seems like a very fraught situation that you're going to get yourself in. It almost would be like, let's say you had two stand-up comedians who are married with each other. That's got to be terrible.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're just always like trying out each other's material and they're giving notes on each other. And at some point they're probably just like, listen, I don't even want you to come to my shows. Right?
You're not funny. Whoa, and then the divorce.
Yeah, that must happen. Well, speaking of which, professional video crews, my recommendation this episode is, I don't even know how these things happen, but I discovered this person who's been around for a while. I think you say his name, Noah Kalina. And he recently, he's like way back from our first generation of internet stuff. I think probably is very similar in my age and graduation stuff. I need to go look that up. But anyways, he's got this great YouTube channel that he just started in maybe like January. And he's already somewhat famous for, he's this guy who's taken a picture of himself for like 15 years and mashes them together in a video, you know, which is interesting, cool. But his videos are, they're somewhat daily, and he just sort of like does stuff out in his New York farm in his kind of like grumpy Gen X art school way. It's very high quality. You can tell he knows how to do lighting and video stuff. And then a classic format that normally is the word abhor or don't look forward to. He's mastered it, at least for my liking. He calls it, and right away you know that it's going to be good because he calls it the hotline episode. So every week people call in with questions and he answers them, and they're pretty good. So anyways, I've been watching way too much of it. It's pretty good stuff. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. Like and subscribe to that, as he says. So speaking of liking and subscribing, I know that you've already liked and subscribed this all that you can because it's Software Defined Talk. You know, if you have your children's phones that they use, or a phone that you thought you were going to upgrade them to, but they would rather use their broken one, just go open up your podcast app and subscribe to the SoftwareDefinedTalk.com podcast. Get more of those download numbers. I noticed ad buys in the tech podcast world, pretty slim, not good. Even the mighty Cloudcast, I've been hearing many ads. So we've got to somehow rally together as a community, get these ads back. High numbers. So help us figure it out. Like and subscribe. But if you want to get the show notes for this episode, you can go to softwaredefinedtalk.com/462. There's all sorts of things we didn't talk about, and I just kind of like flew through the conferences. There's actually some good ones you can go check out there. And with that, we'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. I didn't say much. It'll just be weird silent pauses.